This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Bite Size Business Breakfast for today, Wednesday, January the 13th. The very best bits of today's show, lovingly curated as ever by producer Shruti Rajendran. Hey, Shruts.
Hello.
So we're going to begin with something that doesn't happen very often, a sports story that fascinated Brandy Scott.
It did, yes. It's about the All Blacks and potentially being bought out by a company.
Yeah, this is the New Zealand rugby team, the national rugby team. And a private equity firm is buying a stake in them. Ethically, is that right? It's one thing buying Manchester United, but buying the Indian cricket team?
Yeah, the national team. Yeah, it's a bit weird, but I guess tough times call for whatever investment you can get, I suppose.
Yeah, exactly. Going to get the thoughts of Steve Bainbridge of Al Tamimi. He's a sports lawyer. Also going to be looking at yet another technology company that's curbing the social media presence of President Donald Trump, Google. This morning during the show, this news broke that they've pulled his YouTube account.
Yes, and it's just another one of those social media accounts that Donald Trump now cannot access. This includes now Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, the whole lot. And now apparently he cannot YouTube, so he cannot watch any videos anymore.
He has only got a few more days in office, but we'll actually hear from him as well. He's been speaking about this. And finally, jobs. Apparently, the job market came zooming back into health at the back end of last year for certain sectors, management consulting, pharmaceuticals, which other ones were there?
Tech.
Technology as well, of course. Yeah. Look, the aviation, travel, tourism, still very, very challenged. But for those sectors, it was a really, really good day. We're going to hear from the regional boss of Michael Page. But first up, though, here's Serena with the headlines.
Ask Serena.
Serena, got to begin by asking you about the number of cases, because the number's not a great one, is it?
No. Over the last few days, we've had figures of 2,876, 2,404, and we crossed the 3,000 mark yesterday, 3,243 new cases of COVID-19 in the country. So that's after more than 151,400 tests were conducted, definitely higher than the day before that.
What was the number of tests again?
It was exactly 151,480 tests conducted across the country. So the total tally currently of reported cases in the country stands at 236,225. Let's break that figure down for you. That includes your recoveries. 2,195 people recovered yesterday, so we're at 210,561. You had 6 fatalities yesterday, so we're at 717. And your active cases gone up to 24,947.
Now, we got a bit of insight about the story behind those numbers, didn't we? Because we had a press conference last night.
That's right. It was Dr. Farida Al-Hosni, the UAE health sector spokesperson. She was speaking yesterday, and she was basically touching on the importance of getting vaccinated against COVID-19, because she was referring to those case numbers and the fact that we've seen an increase in recent weeks in the country, and she referred to it's because of locally transmitted infections and also due to international travellers. So she added that authorities are closely tracking changes in components and characteristics of the virus through health monitoring and follow-up systems. Now, she is not the only one that was raising or reiterating the importance of getting vaccinated against the virus. His Highness Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum, Vice President and Prime Minister of the UAE and ruler of Dubai, he was chiming in on Twitter, saying the UAE has come a long way in fighting the pandemic, is calling on everyone to take the vaccine to help not just protect yourself, but your family, loved ones and others. He's praised the tremendous efforts of frontline heroes and commended how the UAE ranked second globally in vaccine administration rates. So as we were referring to yesterday, you had the data come out from Our World in Data Research, placing the UAE second ahead of Bahrain and Israel first in regards to the number of COVID-19 vaccinations that are being administered across the country. So yesterday, 108,401 doses of the vaccine have been distributed within 24 hours. Currently, the country has crossed 1.27 million inoculations. And last night, I'm not sure if you saw online, the ADNOC building in the capital lit up just to mark the milestone, projecting figures and again highlighting the ongoing Choose to Vaccinate campaign in Abu Dhabi.
I mean, at this rate, the target of 50% by the end of March. We're going to make that by Valentine's Day.
Yeah. And it kind of, it's not surprising because, you know, you do have, it's 150 centres across the country currently able to administer the COVID-19 vaccine. You've got the two available. You've got Sinopharm. You've got the Pfizer-BioNTech in Dubai facilities. So it is being rolled out very quickly.
So we're doing over 100,000 a day, basic mass. That's 3 million a month. It's rapid, isn't it?
Yeah, and which is, it's positive because obviously then you're leading on to the more people getting inoculated, the less chance of transmission between people in the community, and it's obviously then hopefully seeing those cases drop in number as well.
Let's talk about kids, Serena, if we can, and the vaccination of kids. I'm looking at a story out of Los Angeles today, and the chief of the schools board in Los Angeles has said once a coronavirus vaccine is available, then children in Los Angeles will only be allowed to go back to school once they have a vaccine. Now, he says that's not the case at the moment because there is no vaccine that's licensed for children. But he says once that is, it will be a requirement. And he's described as, the US News says, he's the first head of a major school department to say that that would be the policy, that would be the stipulation going forward. So what do we know about the timeline for a vaccine for children?
Well, at the moment, studies are still ongoing, and the UAE have definitely said that the vaccine is only available to those 18 years old and above. But of course, I mean, as studies continue to see about for young children, I think the benefit here at the moment is we need to remember when it comes to COVID-19, as the younger you are, the less receptors your body carries with regards to the virus being able to latch on and then, of course, infect you. It's as you get older, you develop more receptors, so it's more likely for COVID-19 to attach itself to you. So I think that's the benefit for young children, that if parents obviously are concerned, you shouldn't be right now. Obviously, get yourself inoculated and the elderly as well. It's those priority high-risk groups. But studies are still being conducted because they want to see, eventually, they want to be able to make sure that that is something that can be provided for young children.
I'm looking at comments from the CEO of Moderna, one of the companies producing vaccines. Stefan Bancel says they have already begun a study testing the vaccine in adolescents as young as 12. That's happening. The study will be done by the time the fall semester, as they call it, starts in September. They expect to start a study for younger children between the ages of 1 and 11 soon. But that study, he says, will take significantly longer. He thinks it could be 2022 before there's a widespread vaccine available for children.
You also have the studies on women who've had COVID-19 whilst pregnant and then delivering babies and then babies already being born with antibodies. So again, a lot of scientific research. It's definitely moving things forward.
Very quickly, international roundup. You're looking at travel restrictions in the United States and the United Kingdom.
Yes. So in the US, January 26, international travelers will need to present a negative COVID-19 test. So it's the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention have initiated the move, saying travelers will need to test 3 days before their US-bound flight. And they've also recommended that travelers stay home for 7 days after their return and receive testing within 3 to 5 days. While in the UK, ministers there could introduce tougher lockdown measures to prevent the NHS from being overwhelmed. They're suggesting physical distancing could be increased from the standard 2 metres to 3, and meeting a friend or for exercise could be banned as well. Meanwhile, 5 major supermarket chains in the country, they have announced that they're making face masks mandatory in-store in the UK unless you're exempt for medical reasons, because currently it's only on public transport that you need to be wearing your face mask.
Yeah, I was looking at a report this morning suggesting that since COVID began, the restrictions on movement in the UK have changed more than 60 times. 64 times the lockdown rules have changed.
Serena Kelly, thank you very much indeed.
More details on the Air and News Centre app.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
Where we are talking the business of sport this morning. Reports out that a US private equity firm is keen to buy up to 15% of the New Zealand All Blacks. We are joined by Steve Bainbridge, Head of Sports and Events Law Practice at Al Tamimi & Co. Steve, good morning. It's nice to speak to you.
Good morning, Brandy and gentlemen.
Rich has been trolling me this morning, Steve, trying to tell me that we're selling the haka in New Zealand. Clearly not for sale. What is actually potentially up here?
Well, look, I think you're right there. I'm sure Richard's having some fun, but we're just a little bit past Christmas, and I think you're fair to believe that this isn't a case of Mr. Potter swooping in to take the Bailey savings and loan. It could be more along the lines of a Fenway Sports Group coming in to take championships to New Zealand. So I think what's going on here is that sports are creaking across the board. There's no doubt that the pandemic has put stress on sporting assets like never before across the board. And I think as assets start to creak, they creak in a certain way and they send signals out to the market. And I think private equity sees some opportunity with the All Blacks, an iconic brand. And I think this is probably a very good thing, especially when you're talking, such low percentages as potentially 15%.
Talk to me about the trouble that sports teams are in. Rugby New Zealand, the All Blacks, have burned through about half of their cash reserves in the last year. Is this just lack of ticket sales?
No, and I think this is the key. This is where the distinction that's going to make them attractive to private equity comes in. Difficult times expose stressed assets, but they don't necessarily cause them. And I think what's happened here is that probably this creaking that I'm talking about when assets are under stress is when we get news coming out. So there's been various reports, even the numbers you mentioned that have come out in the media. Probably the private equity guys around their socially distanced virtual water cooler talk are saying, look, this sounds like things are not being managed properly. The wage bills are probably too high. There's been some talk about management disarray. So they may be thinking, look, we can come in here and with our expertise actually make good multiples on an investment.
So what do you actually get? If you take a stake in Rugby New Zealand / the All Blacks, what do you get for that?
Well, there are four main attractions why private equity would be looking at something like this. The biggest thing here is obviously the brand value. So number one is that the product is great. And with sports, we've spoken about this before, live broadcast is unique in terms of sports maintaining its value. So that's first. Second is there are great opportunities for bolt-ons. So if you think esports, what's going on there, fantasy sports, OTT content, so there's great growth potential. Third would be that you've got undervalued assets. So Silver Lake has probably made the identified and realized that, look, for a reasonable price in a stressed market, we can buy into an iconic global brand. And the fourth one always comes back to the core of private equity. They think that they can run it better than it's currently being run.
I was surprised this morning, Steve, by the lack of emotion in New Zealand about this. I had a good search for outrage. I thought there's got to be some grizzled rugby commentators out there who think this is a travesty. And I couldn't find them.
Well, that just tells me, Brandy, I'll put it in the nicest way possible. I think it's a very mature market where the fans realize that you're talking about a relatively low percentage here. Some of the forerunners, this isn't the first time we've done this dance in global sporting assets. As I referenced previously, Fenway Sports Group took over essentially Liverpool with a far, far greater amount of control, and good things happened. So it's not groundbreaking in terms of what's actually happening big picture, although it's an emotive brand, and as you say here, it really is the pride of a nation. But look, 15%, the question will be, what do they get for that? So you're looking at an injection of cash that on the valuation looks like it will be several years operating costs covered. So the problems will go away and you'll probably have more sophisticated management imposed. And for that 15%, not control. There will be some levers, but unlikely to be control.
Well, let's look bigger picture. New Zealand, ironically, is one of the few places that you can go and watch a rugby match at the moment. With cases on the rise around the world and lockdowns rightly following, what are you looking at the moment for sport in 2021? How much trouble could sports teams get in?
Yeah, that's a very big question. It's a big problem. Obviously, it's high. This is the first of these major assets that we're seeing creaking to this extent, but there will be others. And I think the problem, too, unfortunately, the top stories like this, so where you have an iconic brand that represents a nation, this gets a lot of news. But really what you're looking at is where the match day revenues have been hit most. And that tends to be lower down the leagues and more towards amateur sport. And recently there was some numbers put out suggesting, for example, a Premier League team may rely only 15% on their revenues for match day. But as you slip down to the second and third tier, it's up over 40%. So I think you're going to see a lot more coming in if we don't see very quickly a release on the amount of fans that are allowed in to watch games at grounds.
Steve Bainbridge, Head of Sports and Events Law Practice at the law firm Al-Tamimi. Thanks for your time.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
Get a bit more detail on that breaking news out of Silicon Valley. Google joining Twitter and Facebook in curbing President Trump's social media presence. YouTube, his account has been suspended for a minimum of 7 days for breaching their content regulations. They think his content, some of it, is inappropriate. President Trump, perhaps unsurprisingly, disagrees. This is him speaking yesterday.
So if you read my speech, and many people have done it, and I've seen it both in the papers and in the media, on television, it's been analyzed, and people thought that what I said was totally appropriate. And if you look at what other people have said, politicians at a high level, about the riots during the summer, the horrible riots in Portland and Seattle and various other places, that was a real problem, what they said. But they've analyzed my speech and my words and my final paragraph, my final sentence, and everybody to the T thought it was totally appropriate.
So, Twitter gone, Facebook gone, YouTube has now gone. I was looking to see if he has a TikTok account. He doesn't, but yesterday TikTok did ban certain videos by President Trump and his supporters.
Do you realise quite how mental it is that we're discussing the fact that the President of the United States has been banned from every social media platform and we're not batting an eyelid?
It is the most absurd time of our lives.
I was having a conversation with a friend about this the other day and sort of saying we've reached this level of, and I don't know what you call it, it's not non-flusterability, but there's so much stuff now that floats in front of us. Illegal to sit on a park bench in the UK. All right then, we've given it to gorillas. Okay, jog on. Do you know what I mean? And nothing sort of tips the needle. I mean, I'm looking at one this morning, and I think maybe the images from this one will. Disneyland in California is about to become a mass pandemic vaccination site.
Make it fun. So make vaccinations fun. It's great.
Make vaccinations fun again.
Will they jab you and say, have a nice day?
Will they be in character?
Will you have to queue for an hour and 45
yay.
Minutes?
I got jabbed by Bugs Bunny.
But they are. It is shut for obvious reasons and has been since mid-March. So what's going to happen is it's going to be turned next week into a massive vaccination site, a super point for dispensing vaccinations. People are literally going to be queuing around the Disney castle to get a jab in the arm.
Well, I mean, the Dubai Parks and Resorts
true.
Has been one of the vaccine centres here, hasn't it? But the car park, not the theme park.
I wonder if there'll be merch.
It is bizarre. But it's going a bit further than that, isn't it? Because you mentioned there the social media platforms for the Donald. But it's getting a little bit more serious. We got news yesterday that Deutsche Bank has said enough's enough. They're not going to do any more business with Donald Trump, which basically cuts off his businesses from a major sort. He's taken about $340 million worth of loans with Deutsche Bank down the years.
They won't be cutting off ties that severely then, will they?
I think the invoice is still outstanding at the moment. But they said, look, enough's enough, not going to do any more. Our alliance with you is done and dusted. They once helped fund his golf courses and hotels. We've already seen the PGA in America cut ties with Donald Trump for the staging of events there. Apparently Signature Bank over in the States, never heard of them before, also started closing some of his personal accounts as well, which sort of begs this question. I mean, what's he going to do next? I mean, has he become so toxic that you know, not only social media, but corporate accounts and maybe even the television ties? I mean, can he go back to being the apprentice and firing people after this? Or is he going to move to Dumont Hills?
That there's a thought, isn't it? But it so many tentacles to this one. I mean, one story that's just flashed up in front of me is that Airbnb is trying to block potential Trump supporters from staying in Airbnbs in Washington, D.C. next week during inauguration in case they use it as a base to stage some kind of protest. Now, how Airbnb could possibly do that, either as an organization or if you're simply a left-leaning Democrat voting landlord, how you could screen for that?
No, but I mean, forget can you screen for it. In the US amendment rights and all the rest of it, can you not rent someone a house because you don't agree with their political leanings?
Yep, this is a very good question.
Can you stop them getting on planes? The reports in the last few days of Trump supporters being denied access onto planes because they were accused of being domestic terrorists. That was actually what they were told at check-in, which were preventing them from getting on planes and travelling around. I mean,
no one wearing horns.
Can you put the horns and the spear down, please, sir? And then we can talk. All right.
Overhead luggage.
Yeah. What do you mean you're going to charge me $34 for my horns? No.
Oh, this gallows humor. I mean, they're very serious issues, aren't they? Seven steps that Airbnb is taking: banning people involved in the Capitol riots. Review existing reservations in the DC area. And Airbnb says if we confirm that any guests are associated with a hate group or otherwise not allowed on our platform for violating certain community policies, we will cancel those reservations. So they are vetting people, looking at their social media profiles. If you've been on Parler saying nasty stuff about QAnon, they're going to cancel your reservation.
There's a slippery slope there.
It is.
And that's not the side of the political fence that I stand on, as you know, but even so.
But I thought that yesterday when I started seeing, you know, when you've got the FBI coming out and then issuing warnings and, you know, the mainstream media coming out saying, look, 17th of this month is going to be troublesome. You know, we've got all these marches being promoted over in the United States. When you start seeing that sort of things and the warnings coming out, it sort of gives you a major concern. So maybe this is in the back of that, Trump is trying to stop people congregating.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast,
where we're talking jobs. Yeah, we all work hard for the money, but which industries, which companies are paying the big bucks in 2021? Who's hiring in 2021? Joining us on the line to answer that question is the Regional Director of Michael Page Middle East, John Eid. Morning, John.
Good morning, Richard. How are you?
I'm really good, thanks very much indeed. We got your report yesterday, your 2021 report on the recruitment market here in the Middle East. It's very detailed. It breaks industries down by sector, by job title as well. But give us the headline takeaway. What's going to happen to the job market here in Dubai, the UAE, the wider region in 2021? What's the big story?
Well, look, I guess that's the million-dollar question. I think, first of all, we measure the health of the market from a recruitment perspective very much by job flow. So, obviously, we saw a massive impact during Q2 and Q3 last year, and I'm pleased to say we have seen a massive recovery in place across Q4. So, from sort of September onwards last year, I'm pleased to say that job flow has been steadily increasing across the board, clearly varying across industry to industry. So, for example, obviously there was a lot more stability last year in certain sectors and certain specialisms. So digital, data, technology, pharmaceutical, life sciences, strategy and telecoms. So those are the kind of areas where last year they were much more robust and for obvious reasons, in some circumstances, they fared much better than other areas. For example, retail, aviation, tourism. So clearly some industries are recovering quicker than others, but I'm pleased to say we are well on the way.
In terms of salaries, what can you tell us about what's happening in Q4 last year and what might be happening into 2021?
Well, clearly there was a lot of job salary cuts last year, which were in many cases temporary salary cuts. I think in many cases or probably most cases, those salary cuts have now been removed. So most employees do tend to be enjoying their full salary at least now. Clearly, in terms of pay rises, I would imagine they would be relatively limited this year. We are seeing still an increased demand in those digital data and tech areas. So we are expecting, now that the borders are fully open and travel restrictions are lifted, to see a bit of pent-up demand in those areas this year. So those are the probably areas where salaries could increase a little bit. But apart from that, I would imagine across the board it will be relatively flat. What's particularly interesting about this report, which is unique to our previous reports, is that we've got over 50 specialist consultants across our business, and we've asked for their particular insights into their individual areas. So, for example, banking and finance, talking about what are the most in-demand skills or experience in that specific area, which really adds a lot more value, we feel, to both companies that are looking to hire and understand those skill sets and also candidates who are very much looking at the job market.
So if I want to get hired and earn the big bucks in the UAE or the wider region in 2021, give me an example of the top two or three skill sets that our employers are looking for when they come to companies like yours and saying, we want some high flyers, we've got big salaries to pay, but they've got to have X, Y, and Z skills. What are X, Y, and Z?
Great question. I mean, first of all, I would encourage anybody who's interested to go on our website and download, because there is, as you've seen, loads and loads of interesting information, which is very, very specific to each industry. However, to answer your question, so overall, the kind of key areas where we've seen an increase in demand have been in some soft skills, for example, proactivity. So we've seen, you know, a real need for leaders and management to be dynamic and proactive so that they can easily adapt when necessary. Clearly, the market at the moment is way more dynamic than it used to be. Secondly, you know, leadership. So being capable of managing an organization that's constantly changing, strong leadership has become really, really key. Project management is definitely another area. So having those interpersonal abilities in terms of liaising with key stakeholders and you know, that appreciation of risk and proactively assessing any potential pitfalls. Commercial acumen, clearly cash is key, survival. So having that kind of commercial nous, if you like, to be on top of where the money's going to come from and balancing those risks with that reward. Analytical skills as well. So clearly, we expected digital to progress. We expected data to become more important. But I think certainly COVID has launched us far further ahead than we expected. And a lot of businesses are trying to catch up in that regard.
So if I'm looking for a quick win on my CV or LinkedIn profile over the next few months, taking those skills that you said that employers are looking for, what could I be doing in terms of taking a qualification or improving a skill? Things like leadership, I guess. I mean, you kind of need a track record of having led teams for a long time. So there's maybe not a quick win there. But what would be the quick wins? What should I be studying?
Look, for me, I think candidates need to be careful of overinvesting in something that's not necessarily going to help them get a job. So quite frankly, I think if you're looking for a job in the short term, it's about tailoring your CV and making sure you really think about what experience you have that you can apply to a job. Clearly, studying a completely new area may or may not pay off. But certainly where we find candidates can go wrong is sometimes not tailoring their CV enough. And that's where this guide comes in particularly useful, because it does highlight from our experts which areas are in demand. And then the candidates have the opportunity to really think about where they have that experience in their background. If they're going to study, sorry, go on.
Just a couple of quick, we haven't got long left. Demographics in terms of the age profile and also the nationality of the people who are getting hired into the top jobs. Any changes there? What patterns and trends are you seeing? Gender, whatever it may be.
Arabic skills are a little bit more in demand in the recent 12 months. However, I would say that that's been a trend on the increase for the last few years anyway. So not a great deal of change in that respect, Richard.
Finally, in terms of the industries that are paying the biggest bucks at the moment, who would you say is out in front?
Definitely pharmaceutical, life sciences, the strategic consulting firms are paying big bucks for the right people. There's clearly a lot of change that needs to happen and they're paying for it where they need to. And as I said already, you know, people are sick of hearing it probably, but digital data technology, those real emerging areas.
Thanks very much indeed for joining us. Fascinating insights on your new report. Appreciate you being with us this morning on The Business Breakfast. That is the insights from Michael Page and their latest report. John Eade is the managing director of Michael Page here in the Middle East.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.